Welcome to Brands Working Remote Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat to the Grin Gets Real podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. Now, during our Brands Working Remote Talking Influencers fireside chat, I sat with Brad Handel, the organic marketing manager from Everyman Jack, to talk about his influencer marketing program. With reach and sales as their primary goals when starting an influencer program, it has now become a piece of the puzzle in their overall marketing strategy. Leveraging the content from influencers to help them build out their website and truly go from retail to e-tail. While Everyman Jack brand is highly recognizable, influencer marketing helps them continue creating brand awareness, driving sales, and curating authentic content that connects with their audience. Brad dives into how they leverage that content and what the value of the content is for their brand, and their approach to influencer marketing as a relationship with the influencer versus a transactional approach focused on paying for posts. That has been the key to their success. Those individuals in their program are true brand advocates because they genuinely love the product and use it. As always, he answered some questions during the live Q&A, but we ran out of time before getting to all of them. Today, I sat with Brad again and got through those heavy-hitting questions and am now bringing them to you. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for a little influencer marketing Q&A with Brad from Everyman Jack. Brad, welcome back to an extension of our conversation from Brands Working Remote Talking Influencers that we had earlier this week. This is us taking the Q&A to the podcast, Grin Gets Real. So I appreciate you being our first guest in a Q&A series.
Whoa, that's a big honor. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. I know. Your trophy is in the mail. We'll expect a picture.
I'll put it next to all my other trophies, you know.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So let's get started with some of the questions that were asked during the live webinar. How much time a week do you spend corresponding and engaging with your influencers each week?
I like it. Diving right in.
Yes.
You know, every week is different. And I know that's dancing around an exact answer, but some weeks where things are running smoothly and I don't have a lot of emails or questions or need as much from the influencers, then, you know, maybe it's just a couple hours, like max. But then some weeks, like, you know, it might take a day or two of my time throughout the week to respond to people.
Yeah, I would think that it varies also with the types of campaigns you have going on as well. I know that you guys have a new Marvel line. So if you implemented or executed that particular product launch with influencers, I would imagine that it would take more time. And I think the reason really, honestly, that time was even brought up was that, you know, during the webinar, we did talk a lot about really building relationships, which is key to, you know, having that authentic content. All right. Do you pay any of your influencers or do you have a product gifting program only?
Well, that answer's top secret, but yeah, it's a combination of both, and especially with our products. I mean, we want the guys and the women that we work with to have the product in hand so they can speak about it. They can become familiar with it. You know, I usually try to ask them to all use it for a while before even posting about it, you know, because we want to see what they really like about it.
So, yeah, that's a really good point. And what I was going to say is I think that most people do a combination of product gifting and any form of payment, right? Because payment can come in affiliate links or like a paid for post. It is a combination. I like that you use product gifting as like that introduction to your brand because it is key.
Yeah, I really like to send the guys to our website and say, check it out. Let me know what interests you. And then from there, you can kind of build a package for them of the products that they're actually going to like and want to use.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it tells a different part of your brand story as well, too, right? It's mm-hmm. not all hand sanitizer or soap there. During the webinar, everybody should tune in, but we talked about beards. So it's multifaceted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we make body wash, the shampoos, the styling gels, the hand sanitizer. Yeah. Hand wash. We have a full collaboration with Marvel, which is awesome. We have a sun care line. We have deodorant. I could probably keep talking, but we'll leave it at there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the point is that Iron Man probably uses every man jack.
Oh, this is a podcast. I forgot, but I made a look that was like, yeah, he definitely uses it.
Well, I appreciate it. You're adapting from webinar to podcast so well. Thank you. I know I find myself doing air quotes, and I will tell people I am doing air quotes right now. So how does influencer spend compare to other marketing channels, TV, out of home events, paid social? And do you use influencers for e-commerce, for retail, a mix, and why? That's actually a big question. Let me break it down. Is influencer marketing just the core of all of your marketing? I would assume no, but also don't want to speak for you.
It's a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't share numbers and percentages, but it's an important piece of the puzzle. And yeah, let's leave it at that.
Yeah. An important piece to get the authentic content that you have.
Oh, yeah.
And do you, exactly. Would you say, though, in the puzzle pieces of marketing that you leverage the content from influencers to not support it? Well, yeah, I guess support it, but to like utilize it. And I think that is more of a question of, do you do more than just use that one post from an influencer?
Like use that one post on more than just one.
On more than just like their post on their feed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we use it really anywhere we can. And that's ever evolving. Again, not dodging the question or not trying to not give specifics, but there's so much potential for content across platforms, whether that's digitally, in-store, print, you know, basically anywhere you can speak to a consumer, there's a potential to use influencer content.
How do you onboard an influencer? Do you have a set process or do you send them straight to a campaign? How much communication, much back and forth is there before you truly onboard an influencer into a campaign?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's different parts to it, from the initial outreach, where it's just kind of a brief introduction of the brand, sending them to the campaign where then I try to list more information, mm-hmm. and then also sending them to the website. So there's several layers to that, but then a follow-up, you know, once they get their first product, and then just ask them, you know, what they like, if they have any questions, and then point out a couple of key attributes of anything that I've sent them.
Nice. So you do have a kind of just a not written process of like how you onboard an influencer.
Yeah, that's correct. It's not very regimented. Like there's certain pieces of information that I want to get to each person, but I guess I'm kind of letting I'm rethinking this, but I'm just letting the conversation happen as it does with them, as I get to know them, rather than trying to force them through something right away.
Yeah. I think that you kind of almost need a nice little combination of like, all right, in order to onboard an influencer, I have to have XYZ set up and then they move on to this next step. But you know, I like the approach because it is important to have that relationship with the influencer, and every relationship is going to be unique. There are some people that you're going to be able to text, right? Some people that are like, just email me. So being able to kind of roll with the punches, be nimble, as we say.
Yeah. And I think we're lucky too, in the sense that our product awareness is pretty good. You know, a lot of guys have seen our bottles on the shelf at Target or Walmart or Whole Foods.
Well, and it's also something that they use daily, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's interesting. I don't know if what your thought is on this, if it's something that is used daily, do you think that naturally increases the brand awareness because people need it, right? Like when you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I'm going deep. I know. Sorry. That wasn't planned, but like, I almost think like maybe that does lend to just more brand awareness, more, you know, just more exposure because it is something that people need.
Yeah. That's a good point. We're not, you know, asking them to use a product they've never heard of before.
Yeah. Absolutely. Soap. Yeah. Or at least one would hope not. Okay, so
you're going to make that joke. I was like, oh, it's coming.
It is. It is coming. I'm not downplaying it. Like, I've told you, this is a very male-dominated house in my house. I've got teenagers, husband, male dogs. I mean, it's a lot of testosterone over here. What is your always-on strategy with, say, your triathlon influencers? For example, how do you communicate with athletes to get the info across, get them to carry out the actions desired, and then track their performance?
By sending out at least monthly emails with updates that, you know, either direct them to the campaign page or have the update just in the email itself.
Okay, perfect.
Tracking progress is all done through the campaign tool. I mean, it's so easy to go in and filter by any number of different factors, whether it's dates or the different influencers or what campaign. That seems redundant. But anyway, there's so many things you can go in and filter for that you can see, okay, who's posting, who's not. And then directly from Grin, I'll usually do a follow-up and say, okay, these are the people who haven't posted yet. Like, I'm going to send an email through Grin. And through that tool, I may be getting too deep here, but you can personalize it. So while you're sending, say it's 10 emails at one time, each guy is getting an email that says, hey, Brad, it's not just a group BCC message.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just for clarification for those who are listening, you are running your campaigns through Grin, correct? And when you talk about sending them to the campaign link, that's the live URL for an influencer. Excellent. And then to clarify even further, the live URL for everybody is actually a unique link for every influencer that they get. So rather than sending them an email that has bullet points or even a PDF to download or a DM message, we have a live URL that is very unique to the influencer, and it gives all of the campaign brief information. And it, what Brad is talking about, is just kind of updating per whatever tasks that you have for an evergreen campaign like that.
Quick moment, I would like to recognize Cameron at Grin for all of his help in teaching me how to use the platform. And without him, I wouldn't be here today.
I love it. And he watched your webinar and immediately sent me a message afterwards. Cameron, you rock.
Yeah, let's talk about our lunch again soon, bud.
What do you do if your influencers don't perform how you'd like?
Well, I like to think that I handle it like how you would handle something even outside of just an influencer or ambassador relationship, or just send them an email and try to have a dialogue to see what's going on. You know, especially this year, I think there's a lot of extenuating circumstances that people might not be able to communicate with you, or, you know, let's be honest, sometimes posting on Instagram falls down your list of priorities and you just forget that you made a commitment to post for a brand. And at the end of the day, like, I think, you know, just being open with them and asking them how they're doing and like if they have any questions or need help, and then, you know, subtly remind them about the commitment without being pushy, and then just seeing what they say and, you know, go from there.
Yeah. And they're people. I mean, I think that it's, I think we sometimes forget that it's not transactional. It's a relationship. I mean, treat people how you would want to be treated as well too. Don't say pound sand. You didn't post anything.
And you know, I want this to work for them as much as it's working for us.
Yeah. Now, how do you approach influencers? And for some clarification, I am assuming that the person who had posted this question was really looking for, like, what does that outreach look like? Is it a DM? Is it email first? Is it, I don't know, a carrier pigeon, something else, another form of communication?
It's funny. I was making a joke about carrier chickens earlier today because we have chickens. And so, like, that's more where my brain goes when I think about birds. Like, oh yeah, we could train one of the girls to like carry a message to somebody.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's still well within, you could be sending carrier chickens.
Yeah. It's a possibility as long as they bring the eggs back. But okay. To answer the question, it's a combination. I think it depends on how we find the person. Like, if I'm using the search tool within Grin, a lot of times it's easier to, you know, just check the box and say, influencer has email, or however it's worded. And so that the search results only have, there are only people who have email addresses, so that I can just quickly send them an intro message just right from the platform right then.
Yeah, it makes it easier.
Yeah, but a lot of times, you know, we do get tagged in a lot of stuff on Instagram. So through that, then that goes directly to a DM. Just a quick, hey, like, saw your tag, love what you're doing. Or if they didn't tag us and we saw them, I mean, it's a similar message. Just, hey, love what you're doing. Like, love to talk to you about working with us.
This is a great follow-up question. And this was actually a question that we had from another webinar. And I'd love to get your take on this. There are some people, when it comes to the initial outreach, how much do you say in that first initial outreach? Like, is it the whole, like, hey, this is Brad, I'm from Everyman Jack, this is my life story, and this is Everyman Jack's life story, and, you know, here's a link if you're interested? Or are you more for, like, kind of the short and sweet?
I try to keep it short. I think at first I went pretty long. And again, shout out to Cameron. He was like, bro, you are sending them way too much. Like, you need to cut this back. Nobody's going to want to read this or take the time to follow up. Like, I think you can really shorten that message to tell them enough about you in a sentence or two, and then what you would like to do with them, whatever that relationship is going to look like, for them to write back or click the link.
Yeah, that makes sense. I always just like to get it out there. Like, it less is more when it comes to the initial outreach. If they're interested enough, you're going to eventually get to that point where you can have a longer conversation and they can ask questions. All right. Do you find that the ROAS, the return on ad spend, with using Grin justifies the expense of the platform?
Yes.
I like that. We don't even have to say anything more.
Yeah, there's nothing else to add to that.
Absolutely. It's the right tool for what you want to execute. And yes, we'll leave it at that. So this one is, what are closed networks and what limits do you think that there are to using a closed network?
Okay. I'm not necessarily an expert here, but as I understand it, closed networks are opt-in. So you have to apply.
Yes.
You have to be approved to become part of this network. And once you're in there, I guess the benefit would be that there is some approval process to somebody being a part of it. So there's some vetting. But then the downside is that that network is only so big as the amount of people are let in. And when you're looking for specific types of influencers, as we sometimes do, it makes it hard to find those type of people.
I am giving you a passing grade on Influence Marketing 101. Yes.
I may not have known Maslow's hierarchy. I could not recite that, but at least I got this.
You got this one. You passed this one. But I do think it's really important, because especially when, you know, we definitely get this a lot, because we're not a closed network. We're not in network. We're not here to tell you who is going to be the right influencer. Not everybody is a self-identified influencer. And when you go back and you think about, like, what is the definition of an influencer? It's anyone that has influence. Maybe some people think I am an influencer because, while I don't have a ton of followers on Instagram, they're all willing to hear me. I have a high engagement rate and they're more likely to purchase something, right? So a closed network is really people that have self-identified themselves as influencers. They've signed up for it. They've said, yes, I'm ready. It's essentially like almost a job board. So there are advantages to it, because you know that you're going to get a yes. All of these people are looking to represent particular brands. But what you do lose out on is really establishing a relationship from the get-go and finding someone who authentically wants to represent your brand. Let's see, where are we at here? Okay, in a previous webinar, someone mentioned solely using influencer images for their social feed, meaning that's what they use the images for. Do you do the same, or do you have a balance of non-influencer posts on your organic feed?
Yeah, our feed, I mean, go check it out at Everyman Jack.
Got it.
It's a mix. I mean, we do a lot of in-house work, and we also mix that in with our content we get from influencers.
Perfect. And I think also it depends on the brand too. It's great to hear that you guys have a combination, and what was right for the other brand in the previous webinar that we had was, no, I just want to use influencers for posts. I always say there's no one size fits all, when it comes to influencer marketing, you have to evaluate what your objectives are. What do you want to do with the content? How much of it do you want to use, and what do you want to use it for?
Yeah. I don't want to name any brands, but there's brands who don't use any influencer content and they have a great feed. And there's ones who only use it and have a great feed. And then there's people in the middle. You know, it's just what works for you and what you're trying to put out there.
It's ABT. Always be testing. Always be testing. I think I made that up, or I read that somewhere. I probably read that somewhere. It's too clever for me to say that I made that up. Okay. Based on your experience, would you say that influencer posts are more engaging on your organic feed or over something more branded? Do you have a good gauge of like what performs really well or what doesn't perform really well from your organic feed?
Yeah, you know, it's a mix. I think we see both perform well for different reasons. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't necessarily steer us away from either. They both add value.
Excellent. Again, it's whatever objective you had when you posted it, right?
Yeah.
And then how do you manage getting the rights for repurposing your content? This is a great question because we talked so much about the fact that you guys repurpose your content. Mm-hmm. But how do you get those rights from the influencers to be able to use that?
Can I phone a friend?
Cameron's unavailable.
Yeah, call Cameron, but it's through his help is using the Grin campaign tool. So when an influencer signs up, we are able to put in all of the rights to the content that we're asking for, and they agree to it when they sign up.
Perfect. And yes, we do have baked in content rights that you can go in there, check off. But we also provide the ability to, if you are a brand that has like a set contract, or maybe it's different for particular influencers, depending on the influencer types, you can always upload a PDF of the content rights. All right. And this is the last question. Are you ready for it? How would you say that influencer marketing helps you make a stronger push to e-commerce? What part of influencer marketing helps you guys?
There's not one answer. I mean, I think all aspects of influencer marketing help. I mean, not just e-com, but retail, but specifically to e-com. I feel like I'm rambling a bit, but I feel like everything from the reach from the posts that you're getting, the increases the brand awareness, plus the content that you can repurpose for basically everything.
Yeah.
I think it's helped a lot. I mean, and not only just in e-commerce, but retail as well.
I love it. Well, this has been fantastic, Brad. I appreciate you coming in and sticking it out with me through another session, going through all my antics and whatnot. And I will say this, this is your time to shine. You want to plug anything? Any last minute notes?
Last minute notes? Check us out. If you are a guy or you know a guy.
I think there are a few people out there.
Well, Everyman Jack makes a really wide range of grooming products for guys that not only get the job done, which is obviously very important, but we use naturally dried ingredients. Everything's cruelty-free. The bottles have recycled plastic. I could go on. The products are great. I believe in them personally, and I'm excited to help spread that message.
Excellent. Thank you again so much. Well, that was fun. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Be sure to give us a rating and leave a review. If you're interested in watching the Everyman Jack Fireside Chat or other brands that we've featured in the past, like Loom Cube, Organifi, Trifecta, Tubby Todd, and more, visit the live events section at grin.co. If you are interested in learning more about Grin or all other things influencer marketing, visit our website at grin.co. That's grin.co. And check out our resources and blogs. Until next time, keep grinning.